Thank you. anywhere since he is already everywhere. He can't do anything since the act of doing presupposes opposition. His universe is irrevocably thermodynamic, having no friction by definition. So he has to create friction. War, fear, sickness, death, to keep his dying show on the road. Sooner or later, look, boss, we don't have enough energy left to fry an elderly woman in a flea bag hotel bar. Yeah, we'll have to start faking it. Joe looks after him sourly and mixes a bicarbonate of soda. Sure, start faking it, sure, and leave the details to Joe. Now look, from a real disaster, you get a pig of it. Sacrifice, heroism, grief, separation, fear, and violent death. And remember, one violent death yields more energy than a cancer ward. So, from an energy surplus, you can underwrite the next one. First one is a fake, you can't underwrite a shithouse. Try to explain to God Almighty where his one God universe is going. Asshole doesn't know what buttons to push or what happens when you push them. Abandon ship, goddammit, every man for himself. Recollect Pope John 23 saying, like a little soldier, I stand at attention in the presence of my captain. The old army game from here to eternity. Get there first us with the brownest nose.
Concepite spiritus sanctus. Well, I heard that hoot owl singing as they were taking down the tents. The stars above the barren trees was his only audience. Then charcoal gypsy maidens can strut their feathers well, but nobody can sing the blues like Blind Willie McDowell. See them big plantations burning, hear the cracking of the whips, smell that sweet magnolia blooming. I can hear them tribes moaning, hear that undertaker's bell. Nobody can sing the blues like Blind Willie McDowell. There's a woman by the river with some fine young handsome man. He's dressed up like a squire, bootleg whiskey in his hand. There's a chain gang on the highway, I can hear them rebels, yeah.
Inside ourselves.
Unfold. The pastures were green and the meadows were gold. Our love was in flower as summer grew on. Her love, like the leaves, now have withered and gone. The roses have faded, there's frost at my door. The birds in the morning don't sing anymore. The grass in the valley is starting to die, and out in the darkness the whippoorwills cry. Alone and forsaken by fate and by man, oh Lord, if you hear me, please hold my hand. Oh, please understand. Oh, where has she gone to? Oh, where can she be? She may have forsaken some other like me. She promised to honor, to love and obey. Each vow was a plaything that she threw away. The darkness is falling, the sky has turned gray. A hound in the distance is starting to bay. I wonder what she's thinking of. Forsaken, forgotten, without any alone and forsaken by fate and by man. Oh Lord, if you hear me, please hold my hand. Oh, understand. Thank you.
don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I can't even see the reason why. But I guess I'll keep a gambling. Lots of booze and lots of rambling. Man, it's easier than just a waiting around to die. But one time, friends, I had a ma. I even had a pa. He beat her with a belt once cause she cried. She told him to take care of me. Get it down to Tennessee. Oh, it's easier just to wait around to die. I come age and I found a girl in a Tuscaloosa bar. She cleaned me out and hit it on the slide. I tried to kill the pain. I bought some wine and hopped a train. It's easier than just a waiting around. And a friend said he knew where some easy money was. We robbed a man and brother did we fly. But a posse caught up with me, drugged me back to Muskogee. And it's 2 long years just a waiting around to die. But now I'm at a prison. I got me a friend at last. And he don't drink or steal or cheat or lie. Well, his name's Codeine. He's the nicest thing I've seen. But together we're gonna wait around. Well, together we're gonna wait around.
Since the kids have been little, they've always known that I've vanished from their lives periodically. And they never really had the idea of what it is that I do. What do I do? If I don't know, why should they? We never traveled together at all. You know, since the kids have been little, they've always known that I've vanished from their lives periodically. And they never really had the idea of what it is that I do. Brendan, the 14-year-old, he got to travel with me during the summer. But we got a chance to talk to each other as adults, you know, as adults, instead of just father and son. Boston. We were headed up to the Left Bank Cafe in Blue Hill, Maine. And Brandon, just above Marblehead, turned to me and he said, "How did you get to be like that?" It's a fair question. I knew what he meant. I knew that but he didn't have all the language to say exactly what he meant. What he meant to say was, why is it that you are fundamentally alienated from the entire institutional structure of society? And I said, well, I've never been asked that, you know. Now, don't listen to the radio and don't talk to me for half an hour while I think about it. So we drove and talked. We were on Highway 1 because it was pretty and close to the water. Got up toward the main border, and there was a picnic area off to the side, some picnic tables. It was a bright, clear day. So I pulled into their parking lot. We sat down at the picnic tables, and I said, now, sit down. I want to tell you a story. So I've thought about it. When we sat down, I said, you know, I was over in Korea. And he said, yeah, I've always wondered about that. Did you shoot anybody? And I said, as honestly as I could, I don't know. But that's not the story. I said, listen to what I'm telling you. I was up at Kumari Gap there by the Imjin River. There were about 75,000 Chinese soldiers on the other side, and they all wanted me out of there with every righteous reason that you could think of. I had long since figured out that I was the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time for the most specious of reasons. But there I was. My clothing was rotting on my body. Every exotic mold in the world was attacking my clothing and my person. My boots had big holes in them from the rot. I wanted to swim in the Imjin River and get that feeling of death, that feeling of rot off of me. The Chinese soldiers were on the other side. They were swimming. They were having a wonderful time. But there was a rule, a regulation against swimming in the Imjin River. I thought that was foolish, but then a young Korean fella worked for us as a carpenter by the name of Yun Suk An. All of his family had been killed off in the war. But he said to me in what English he had, you know, when we get married here, the young married couple moves in with the elders. They move in with the grandparents. But there's nothing growing. Everything's been destroyed. There's no food. So the first baby that's born, the oldest, the old man, goes out with a jug of water and a blanket and sits on the bank of the Imjin River and waits to die. Sits there until he dies, and then will roll down the bank and into the river, and his body will be carried out to the sea. And we don't want you to swim in the Imjin River because our elders are floating out to sea. That's when it began to crumble for me, you know. That's when I ran away, and not just from that. I ran away from the blueprint for self-destruction I had been handed as a man, for violence in excess, for sexual excess, for racial excess. We had a commanding officer who said of the GI babies, fathered by GIs and Korean mothers, that the Korean government wouldn't care for, so they were in these orphanages. And he said, well, as sad as that is, someday this will really help the Korean people because it'll raise the intelligence level. That's what we were dealing with, you know. So I ran away. I ran down to Seoul City, down toward ASCOM, not to the army. I ran away to a place called the Korea House. It was a Korean civilians reaching out to GIs to give them some better vision of who they were than what we were getting up in the divisions. And they hid me for 3 weeks. Late one night, because they didn't have any clothes that would fit me. Late one night, it was a stormy, stormy night, rain falling in sheets. I could go out, because they figured nobody would see me. We walked through the mud and the rain. Seoul City was devastated. And they took me to a concert at the AWOL Women's University. Large auditorium with shell holes in the ceiling and the rain pouring through the holes and Klieg lights on the stage hooked up to car batteries. This wasn't the USO, this was the Korean Students Association. The person that they had invited to sing, I was the only white person there, the person they had invited to sing was Marian Anderson, the great black operatic soprano who had been on tour in Japan, you see. There she was singing Oh Freedom and Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. And I watched her through the rain coming through the ceiling and thought back to Salt Lake. And my father, Sid, who ran the Capitol Theater, was a movie house, but it had been an old vaudeville house, and he wanted to bring live performances back to the Capitol. In 1948, he invited Marian Anderson to come and sing there. And I remember we went to the train station to pick her up and took her to the biggest hotel in town, the Hotel Utah, but they wouldn't let her stay there because she was black. and I remember my father's humiliation and her humiliation as I saw her singing there through the rain. And I realized right then, I said, Brendan, right then I knew that it was all wrong, that it all had to change, and that change had to start with me.